Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an Mind Power here for the next hour. But we're going to be approaching a subject today that so many of us have had. Boy, I can raise my hand on this one. It is negotiating things. Well, we hear all kinds of hype around the topic of negotiation. I know I've encountered people that think if they are a hardliner and they'll just say this is the only way, that's a good way to negotiate. Others will say, well, you don't cause any conflict, and you go through all kinds of things. My guest today, Tali Raffaele, he's an attorney, and boy, do they have to know how to negotiate, but he's also a real estate investor and a speaker. And he really believes that we can learn how to negotiate. Through different cultures, certain people have been known for skills in negotiating, and obviously it's a talent that often is passed on by individuals to others. But this is something that's tough for a lot of us. So we're going to be talking with Tali Raffaele. He's published a book called The Complete Guide on How to Negotiate, How to Master the Art of Getting What You Want in Business and in Life. Tali, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna. Great to be here with you today.
Tali, this is a challenge for just about anybody. I can't remember meeting anybody that said, oh, I've been able to negotiate from the moment I was born. Well, I guess every baby could say they know how to negotiate, but their terms typically are so demanding that you can't do anything about it. And then after a while, when mom and dad smarten up a little bit, hopefully, they learn about the negotiating techniques for the kid or with the child. Let's talk about the adult aspect here, because negotiating is almost like a ballet, depending on what environment you're in. You have to know how to choreograph it. You know, have to know how to move through it. It really is quite a sophisticated skill. How in the world, I know being an attorney, this is something you have to learn, but how in the world did you become so specialized with this? Why is it that you felt you needed to pass this along? You could have kept this knowledge to yourself.
Well, I tell you what, I love sharing anything I can, ideas, strategies, any sort of helpful information with others. I think after you've accomplished certain things in your life, and what makes you really happy is to see others develop their skills and become more successful. So I take great pleasure in actually sharing all these strategies with anybody who wants to learn them. It's very important in life to be a good negotiator. People don't even realize sometimes how often they actually are negotiating throughout their everyday lives. You're really negotiating all day long, pretty much. It's not just when you're buying a car or selling a house or asking for a raise in your salary. You're negotiating with your friends. You're negotiating with people in stores. You're negotiating with vendors when you're buying things, when you're using services, hiring companies. It's all the time. You're negotiating with strangers at times even. When somebody has something that you want or you have something they want and you try to work out an amicable mutual agreement so everybody's happy, everybody gets what they want. It's something that happens throughout the day, and it happens all throughout your course of your life. So it's very important to be good at it.
I do think that there's different aspects and applications of negotiating skills. On this recent business trip I was on, I had someone who is in the hotel industry. We were discussing the area that I was visiting and how the hotel rates had just skyrocketed. And they said, well, what you do, you go in, you talk to the manager, and you just do this, that, or the other. And really, it was a pretty obnoxious way of dealing in negotiating. And I thought, no, that won't work for me. Yet I went into the hotel, and as I was checking in, the young lady that was checking me in, I said, you know, I was really surprised at how much the rates had increased. It almost doubled since last year. Is there a reason for that? And then she went and looked at my reservation. She said, oh, my goodness, that's not the rate you should have been charged. And I thought if I hadn't asked, if I hadn't been courteous, it just would have been a bear of a situation. But by golly,
you handle that perfectly. That's exactly what I advise people to do. You don't go in and you don't complain. You don't make a big deal of it. You're never demanding. That doesn't work. And it may work once, but you're not going to feel comfortable with yourself doing something like that. You don't want to be a pest. That's not what it's about at all. It's about being reasonable. It's about forming a relationship, which is exactly what you did with that person at the hotel. Basically, just and it's very important what you said as well. You have to ask, because if you don't ask, you'll never receive. You'll never know. The worst that can happen is they say no. It's the way that you ask something. You asked in a very polite way. You were just curious. And what you did was you put it out there that, hey, maybe if there's a possibility, if there's something better, would you please let me know? That's pretty much what happened. And the person was very happy to help you because of the way that you framed the question, because of the way that you pursued it. Very, very important, really, how you approach this.
I think that's very, very true. And especially people working in, let's say, the hospitality industry and many different jobs. This particular young lady had just verbally been assaulted by someone, and I was standing there watching it. And it just was very painful for her. She just was having a very tough time with a very obnoxious person. So if I had taken on the attitude of being of the same disposition, I would have been in the deep six.
It's true. You want to enlist someone as an ally. And this is throughout any type of situation such as this. You don't want to make an enemy out of anybody. They're not going to help you. They don't want to help you. It's not about that. You get a lot more. You get a lot more this way, and you feel a lot better about it. And you form almost a new friendship as well. She would love nothing more than to make your life easier and to save you money if she can. And when you frame the question that way, she wants to. She's glad to help you, and you're a relief after a breath of fresh air after what she had just gone through with the person before.
Let's talk about some basic concepts that you bring out in your book. Now, we've all heard of the good cop, the bad cop, but you use it from a perspective that when someone is presenting an option to you, that you talk about having an associate. Boy, I'll tell you, I've been so gullible in so many different situations in my life. This is really a very good measure to utilize. Tell us about the good cop, bad cop positioning.
Well, sometimes it can work for you. Sometimes, of course, it's working against you. You just have to be aware of it. What happens is, if you're negotiating with somebody, negotiations are getting pretty difficult, and there's some things that you're still not agreeing on, you could always, if you had started from the very beginning and just said there's somebody else involved that you have to go back to sometimes, it allows you, if there is somebody else involved or if you make the other person understand that someone else could be involved, it allows you to play good cop, bad cop. You could be the good guy and you could be saying, hey, look, I get you. I understand what you're saying. I agree with you. But my partner, Donna, I mean, she's really tough. I really am going to have to talk her down a little bit. Is there anything that we can maybe throw in there just to kind of get her to relax a little bit? Because she's really being tough on me and really just making sure that we don't go over this amount of money or we don't give away this or et cetera. So it's always good because Donna's not there. You're only dealing with the person one-on-one, so it's pretty easy. Just blame it on Donna to a certain extent and have the person realize that you still have someone to answer to, and that would be me. I'd have to answer to you, Donna. And so the person really wants to try to be helpful and make this work. He understands I'm really doing my best to make this happen, but there is some other person there who's not quite as reasonable. She's not with us, but let's just give her a little bit just so that she's happy with the deal as well. Of course, on the flip side, this could be happening to you as well. You just have to be aware of it. If you're negotiating with somebody, but they have someone else that they're talking to, you want to always, mm-hmm. if you can, get both people in the room, get both people on the phone, so you're not negotiating into this good cop, bad cop type of environment. So the same thing doesn't happen to you. And it's not dishonest, and it's a part of negotiations many, many times. And most of the time, you're going to have a spouse who you have to answer to. So mm-hmm. if you're dealing with a vendor for something for your home, I mean, it's a very fair thing to say. My wife would kill me if I pay this much, or my wife will be very upset if it takes this long or whatever. You know, most of us have business partners or other employees if it's a business-related matter, or other people in our department that we also have to answer to. So a lot of times it really is something that's actually occurring. You just have to make the other side aware of it.
this next point, I think, is extremely significant. Anybody that's ever had to do sales, boy, they understand this big time. You need to negotiate with the person who has the final authority. How many times have all of us been in situations where we think we're talking to the right person and we're not? And you have your gatekeepers. In negotiations, especially if you are interacting in a substantial kind of a situation, you may find that you've been spending a lot of time with a person that just doesn't have any authority at all. And that can be very frustrating. How do you go out and how do you find out about the person you should be speaking to? What's the best approach for that?
Well, for what's happened to you there is you've basically fallen victim to the good cop, bad cop routines to a certain extent, because you're wasting your time negotiating with somebody who doesn't have final authority. So that person may agree to certain terms, but then there's still another person who has to sign off on it, which can be very frustrating for you, and it's going to be a lot harder for you to get concessions from them. Those concessions are going to come a lot slower, fewer and far in between, than you, because you don't have anybody else that you have to deal with on your end. How do you find out about that? These are things you have to ask in the very beginning. Sometimes it's obvious that it's not an issue. If you know that you're dealing with the person who's selling the car, you're dealing with the homeowner, et cetera. But as soon as you hear any mention that there's somebody else involved, you need to really go out of your way to make sure we get that person involved. And you also have to ask if there's someone else involved. If the person says, well, you know, my business partner wouldn't like this, et cetera, you then have to ask, well, do you have the final, authority to enter into this agreement with me, or are we going to have to involve him or her as well? And you, of course, do so in a very nice way. You never want to be condescending. You don't want to make the person feel like they have no authority, but you're just asking. You have to ask in a friendly way, and you're just doing it out of curiosity, just to make sure that the people who need to be there are involved.
Now, you had a statement in another one of your points, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. And I thought, boy, that's cutting to the chase. We need to remember, you say, never to get careless and think the other people have no options. Wow, that is huge. When you look at the world today, we have so many options. Maybe back in medieval times we didn't have so many, but in today's world, people have a plethora of options. You're not. Someone, you might have something that's not even unique. Maybe you're selling eggs. I mean, and look at how many gazillion of those are out there. This is really tough to wrap your mind around. That is something that I think is, that's a big one for people.
Well, what happens, Donna, is a lot of times people just get a little carried away with themselves, and they think what they have to offer is irreplaceable, and nobody else has anything like this. They think maybe they're the only person who can afford to buy this house, or they think their house is so special that no one's going to want the house down the street. But you can't do that to yourself, because what ends up happening is, when your thought process becomes that way, you start getting greedy, you start becoming very hard to deal with, you become less reasonable because you think you have this all this leverage. And what ends up happening is you could push somebody away, and if people's emotions get involved, they'll all of a sudden settle for the second best house, or they'll settle for less money just so they don't have to deal with your demands anymore. So it's very important that you realize you have to be very open-minded. You have to be neutral about whether your item or whether you in any way are unique and have something to offer. But besides that, you also, you've got to be really realistic about it, because if you're thinking that you have something to offer that others don't, and you realize that that's not true, it may be too late. It's very important to really be aware of that, and understand that if you put somebody, if you push them far enough into the corner and their back's against the wall, they may end up just doing whatever they can to go deal with somebody else. And you've lost yourself a good deal, because you could have had a good deal and then you just got greedy, and before you know it, you push the person away. Very important to realize the limitations. And you do that by continuing to communicate with the person. Be apologetic when you're asking for what you know may be a little too much. Be very open-minded. Understand the other person's point of view. Do your best to see things from their perspective. And when you do that, you'll start realizing when you may be pushing a little bit too much.
Well, I think that there is something very significant in what you've just shared. You used a word, don't be too demanding. And along that, there is a companion that I would call into place called patience. And patience is so important because if you're wanting to build good associations, there's something that cannot be rushed. And when people are going through various situations, when you're complimentary, when you are thoughtful, when you're presenting yourself, there is the aspect of trust that usually is developed. And it's that consistency. And I have found it in my life, both professionally and personally, that those two things, patience and the aspect of trust, man, you've got a powerhouse right there.
It's very true. It goes to people's skills. It really does. And it goes to just working and getting along well with people, understanding people, putting yourself in their shoes. That's what it really comes down to. And that's when you become a master negotiator, when you can do those things well. And it really just, it comes down to actually caring about other people. It's never about trying to get the most out of somebody. It's really about working something out amicably, a mutual respect, being open and honest with people, and making sure that communication is wide open. Just go over any thoughts and ideas. It's amazing what great things can happen when you treat people well, you listen to what they have to say, and you respect their position. People open up to that, and before you know it, they become a lot more reasonable with you because you're being reasonable with them. Don't wait for somebody to be good to you. Be good to them first, and before you know it, they'll be good to you as well. They'll see that they're dealing with an honest, good person who actually really does care about the people aspect of this as well, and before you know it, they'll be in line with you on the same thoughts.
One of the many points that you have here that I really think is significant is looking at a person's needs. And if you're in sales, if you are dealing with someone that you're trying to negotiate for, or you are trying to look at how your product or service is going to be able to benefit them in some way, lots of times people may be in situations financially or in other aspects where they're really not necessarily going to be open at the moment to what you're doing. And I really like your positioning here and your thoughts, because you say you need to be prepared in case your first approach doesn't work, that you can come back later on and that you can reintroduce what you've got, what you can do, and the person may be open to that. It is really quite interesting, this I'll call diplomacy, because I think good negotiation is very much a part of that. It's very, very important that you be prepared that you may need to make a graceful exit, that what you're trying to negotiate may not work out, but you don't threaten them, you don't lower the boom, you leave things in a compatible environment so that they have a good thought about you.
Very true, Donna. A lot of times what happens is you're not going to get exactly what you want. You may realize, you know what, maybe we just need to part ways for a little bit, let both parties think about things. Let both parties think about things and see if maybe after a little bit of time away from the negotiation, somebody realizes, oh, there's another way that we could have maybe handled this, or there's another creative solution to this problem, or maybe after a little bit, the other party realizes maybe they can't afford to pay a little bit more, or take a little bit less. It's all in how you leave things and how you communicate with that party. If you ended up doing a take-it-or-leave-it type of approach, it's going to be really hard for them to pick up the phone or send an email to you because pride's going to be involved. If instead you keep things very amicable and you basically say, look, we still would love to work things out with you, maybe after a little bit of time away, maybe we can get back together and try to see if we can work something out. What you've done is you've left that communication open. You left the channel of communication open for further possibilities, and you haven't reduced any leverage. You haven't said that you're willing to take less or you're going to pay more. You just said, hey, let's try to revisit this maybe. It's very important that you do that, that you leave yourself a way to come back. And then if you still, after a couple of days or a couple of hours, depending on the type of situation, if you still feel like you really want to make this deal, even at the terms that were left when you guys parted ways, you can very easily reach out to them. Pride won't be an issue. You won't lose leverage because you're even the one who said, hey, let's maybe try to revisit this in a little bit. So you're just doing what you said you were going to do. There's not going to be that desperation that's going to come about. You're not going to look like you've lost leverage or you need the deal too badly. What you're doing is you just want to really open that line of communication up again. And let's see if we can finish where we left off and try to work things out. So how you leave things is very, very important so that there still is a possibility. And you never know, because a lot of times you may get a little emotional and a little heated possibly at the time of negotiation, but an hour or two later or a couple of days later, you may cool down and realize that you're still getting a great deal.
That's very true. I do think you make such wonderful, wonderful suggestions in your book about how to negotiate, developing appreciation for a good deal. And number 17 in your list is trust your instincts. Wow, how many times do we find ourselves with someone that we know in our gut we should not do business with, and yet we override it? I'll raise my hand. I have done that. And by golly, I have gotten bitten seriously in a negative way each time I override that. What was the biggest challenge for you, Tali, that made you really aware of this?
Well, I'm an owner of a nationwide real estate title company, and there are real estate deals all over the country, obviously, at all times. And sometimes what happens is there are people out there who are working on big deals, and you see big, big dollar signs, but the people don't always have the best intentions business-wise. Sometimes maybe they're getting into a gray area of the law. And sometimes you can have some serious temptation when so many dollars are involved, big deals are involved. But at the end of the day, you realize to yourself, you know what, this is someone I really don't want to do business with because it could lead down the wrong path. And before you know it, I'll be involved in a situation I'll regret later. So being in business, you just start realizing right away, you become a very good, you get yourself a good built-in barometer on people. And when you feel like you're dealing with somebody who's not trustworthy, who lacks a certain level of integrity, then you really have to protect yourself, and you really should just not do business with that person. They say that the stripes of the zebra, you know, they don't change. So it's very, very important. I have a fable there of the scorpion and the frog in my book as well. Very important to really trust your instincts on a person, on a company, on a deal as well. If a deal just doesn't feel right for whatever reason, something feels too good to be true, it probably is. You've got to listen to your instincts. It's very important. When you don't, a lot of times what happens is greed sets in. And I even say in the book, I say you're actually, without realizing it, there's an internal conflict going on in your head. On the one hand, you don't want to lose out on a deal that potentially could be so amazing for you. On the other hand, you know it might be a little bit too good to be true, and you don't want to be taken for a ride and scammed either. So you really have this process going on in your head. Am I getting scammed, or if I don't do this, am I losing out on a great opportunity that I'll regret later? And so what happens is, if you're not careful and you get greedy, you can end up doing business with the wrong people or end up getting into the wrong situation. So really listen to your instincts. Most of the time, your instincts will be right. And most of the time, it's better to walk away than it is to get involved in something that's going to end up hurting you in the end.
Wow. Those are words of wisdom that I think we can all benefit from. And I'm sure we've heard them many times in our lives from other people who, like myself, have gotten scorched a few times, big time. And you go, why did I set myself up to be let down like this? And I think so often we get so involved in our perception of what we feel can happen without really looking at the facts of what can happen. And I think that checking information sources and all kinds of stuff, we as people typically want to really work on a level of trust which is appropriate. But so many times, if you're in business or if you're going to participate in certain projects, if you don't ask questions, if you're not a good listener, if you're really not a good observer, you're going to find yourself perhaps in a positioning of being obligated that you really didn't want to be in at all. And I know all of us go through this. But how to develop better listening skills, how to deal with pressures and timelines when people will say, well, this is the only time it's going to happen. And fortunately, I have gotten to a point with some, and I said, well, that's perfectly all right. No big deal. I'll pass it by. I wish you well. And it just, all of a sudden, you realize they've been bluffing you. So there's so much in your book, and you've done such a superb job of making it concise, to the point. By golly, folks, you can carry this around in your briefcase. You can put it in your desk. But it is important to understand, as people, we're always negotiating, just like Tali Raffaele has said. Now, you can go to his website, TaliRaffaele.com, and let me spell that out for you. T like Tom, A-L-I, R like Robert, A-P like Paul, H-E-L-Y.com. Tali Raffaele, the complete guide on how to negotiate, master the art of getting what you want in business and in life. Good tool. Good tool. Why not learn about them? Why not use them? I think your life will be better for it. Tali, we have about a minute before we close out. What comment would you like or thought would you like to leave with my audience today?
Well, Donna, first of all, thank you so much. It's been great speaking with you. I think this is very important, really, just to put yourself in the other person's shoes when you're dealing with in a negotiation. Really try to understand where the person's coming from, understand their wants and needs, and you do that by asking questions. You engage in conversation, you get to know the person, you get to know their wants, their needs. And when you can do that, before you know it, you can start coming up with creative solutions they may not have even thought of that will still get them to where they need to be. So if you don't know where they're coming from and what their goals are, if you're not asking the right questions, you're leaving a lot on the table. You're leaving a lot left to chance, where sometimes you may assume that somebody wants something because of there may be a reason that you think is why they want something. But when you ask more questions, you realize that's not it. Their goal was not even at all what you thought it was. They had a different goal. There was, maybe it was sentimental. Maybe it was this. Maybe it was that. Who knows? But until you ask the right questions, you'll never get the right information. So, and when Donna, when you mentioned listening, listening is more important than anything. You learn when you listen. So when you're talking, you're not hearing the other person. So it's very important to let people talk, let them finish their sentences, and ask questions based on what they've said as well. And that's how you continue to get great, valuable information.
Boy, that last piece of wisdom can be applied in all levels of life. Tali Raffaele, thank you so much. I know that you've had some challenges that you've had to go through. I so appreciate your being with us today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Go to his website, TaliRaffaele.com. I think you really would find this book valuable. Pass it on to your kids, too. Good thing. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. More good things to share. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Siebel. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Why? Because if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I can do exactly that. 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then I'll give you what I see mentally. And after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. Again, 888-627-6008. Well, I have some fun information here. It's just trivial. You know, Halloween is just around the corner. And in our neighborhood, we just have an enthusiastic endorsement of the holiday on so many levels. We just have all these neighbors that go to the nines and decorating their homes, and it is really fun. And I passed one home yesterday that must have had 20 pumpkins of different sizes and shapes all lined up outside their fence. And every single one of these pumpkins had a different face on it. And it was just absolutely a lot of fun to drive by and see this imaginative display. And then I had the pleasure of watching a mom working with her little girl to set up everything outside, putting up the artificial spider webs and the witches and all this kind of thing. The jack-o'-lantern is a very significant part of Halloween. It has been around for a long time. And, of course, there's an automatic association with a jack-o'-lantern and the Irish, yes. Well, it comes from an old Irish custom of creating lanterns from vegetables, not just pumpkins. And the little child of the Irish culture, they had what they called their Halloween flashlight. That's a modern term for the time period when this was started. It used to be a hollowed-out turnip or a potato with a candle inside. Now, when the Irish came into the United States and they saw the golden pumpkins, they had an idea. Yes, they were going to hollow it out, and it soon became acceptable to so many, and naturally, the wonderful tradition of holiday, Halloween was forever blessed with that image. Now, how did this tradition get started? Well, there's an old, old story. It's about a man by the name of Jack. Now, he was notoriously stingy, and he nearly lost his soul one Halloween night when he chanced upon the devil in a pub. Many more than one over the eight, Jack was about to expire, and old Nick was about to claim his doomed spirit. When somehow Jack, Jack was a negotiator. He managed to convince the devil that if he could have one last drink, he'd follow him happily to Hades. "The trouble is," said Jack, "I have no more money. So if you'll just change yourself into a sixpence, I can have my drink, and we can be on our way." The devil, happy to demonstrate his shape-shifting prowess, obliged. Jack popped him into a purse and refused to let him out until he promised not to claim his soul for 10 years. But that wasn't the end of Jack's story. 10 years later, Jack was walking in the country near an orchard when old Nick came to collect. But Jack had another ruse up his sleeve. "Before you carry me off to perdition," he asked the devil, "would you be the gentleman I've heard that you are and fetch me one of those apples? You can stand on my shoulders to reach it." The devil, who'd learned a little from their last encounter, climbed upon Jack's shoulders, whereupon Jack whipped out a penknife and carved a cross in the trunk of the tree. This left the devil in the air, and as a condition of getting him down, Jack made him promise that he would never again ask for his soul, and the devil, double-crossed again, had to promise. However, apparently, according to the Irish legend, there was a different ending to Jack's story. When Jack finally died, he was turned away from heaven for his sins, and when he then applied for entrance to hell, The devil said, I cannot break my word. So poor Jack had nowhere to go and was condemned to become a kind of a wandering Celtic soul. Give me at least a light to find my way, he pleaded with the devil. And in this, the devil obliged him by hurling in his direction a coal from the fires below. According to tradition, Jack placed it inside a turnip he had been munching, and the jack-o'-lantern was born. Don't you just love these legends? I just think they're absolutely fun. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. There are so many ways to use a cell phone, and I just think that people in today's world are finding more and more ways to utilize it. But have you ever thought about it being actually a tool that can make your life better? Well, they have found that photography is extremely important to people. And they say if you want to make your environment a happier environment, take pictures of things you like so that you can look at them on your phone. Maybe you love the images of Hawaii, or there's something that inspires you. Well, take a photo of it so that you can look at it whenever you like. Also, family photos. If you're concerned that you don't have enough willpower to avoid whatever temptations you may feel you have the chance to experience, when you see members of family, you look at their pictures, you're reminded of your responsibility and also of your love for them. It can really have a tremendous impact. But this one really got me. I thought, I wonder how many people would think of this. If you're on a diet and you're wanting to lose weight, you can find yourself actually losing weight by taking a photo of the meal that you are going to be eating. We're told to do a food journal, typically. But they said the 10-second trick of taking a picture of your meal has been proven to help people lose lots of pounds because you're switching off of eating automatically. Have you ever found yourself just eating and eating and eating, and then you go, where did the food go? 20 minutes later, you feel like you've got an expanded waistline of 10 inches because you've consumed so much food you didn't even know what you were putting in your mouth? Well, this mindful action of taking a photograph of what you're eating says it makes a big difference. And they say hit zoom to get the biggest benefit. When your food looks more detailed, the brain gets tricked into thinking your meal is more satisfying, which leads you to eat less effortlessly. Who thought your phone is going to help you lose weight? And, of course, it's a great way to stimulate creativity if you're an artist. Oh, my goodness, there are so many people I see saying, I want this idea. I want to use it in my crafts. Or I really like this concept. I want to do this in my home. Or I like this. Maybe I'll design something in the way of a piece of clothing. So who would have ever imagined that the simple phone would have had such an impact in so many ways of on our life? It's just absolutely incredible. And if you'd like me to help you look at things differently in your life or find out what's going on in your life, give me a call at 888-627-6008. 627-6008. By the way, my award-winning children's book, God's Kiss, is celebrating its 20th anniversary, and we are going to be bringing up a new web page on our website of DelphiInternational.com. That should be coming up fairly quickly, and as soon as that does come up, you're going to find that we've got products that are going to be available for your listening and reading pleasure, not just the children's book, which is a wonderful gift for the holiday season, but also we're going to be putting up ebooks for The Miracle of Eight Pennies, for Mind Magic, publication on the development of the mind and mind skills. And also, there's going to be audiobooks as well that you'll be able to download and play on your iPod or, you know, put it somewhere in your file system for your reading and, again, your listening pleasure. I wanted to also bring up a point about the story that Tully was talking about today. Remember we were discussing how you really need to trust your gut. You need to pay attention to what's going on. He talked about the story of the scorpion and the frog. And this story has been adapted into many different modalities. But it deals with really paying attention to the facts. And this is how the story goes. There's a frog, and of course, he's in this pond, and actually he decides he's going to go visit a river. And he's done this before. He doesn't think anything of it. So he's ready to go across the river, and a scorpion comes up to him. And a scorpion says, "Would you let me ride on your back?" And the frog said, "Well, I'll be happy to, but you're a scorpion. You sting people, and they die." And the scorpion said, "Yes, that is true. But that's usually only when I'm hungry or extenuating circumstances. But I'm not able to swim. I can't cross this river. You're a frog. Won't you let me ride on your back? I promise you I'm not going to harm you." Well, the frog and the scorpion continued their conversation. And eventually the frog said, "Okay, I'm a good swimmer, but you need to know that before we get to shore, the water is very shallow, and you're going to need, I'll drop you off by some rocks. How does that sound?" Scorpion says, "That sounds great. Not a problem. As long as I don't have to get in the water, that's fine." So the frog said, "Okay, go ahead, crawl on, I'll take you across." So the frog goes into the river, scorpion's on his back, and he makes sure that he stays above the water line so that he can travel across the river. Sure enough, he's coming close to where the rocks are, where the scorpion can crawl off of his back onto the rocks, because the frog is going to be hopping, and he's going to be getting up on shore, but he's got some things that he has to take care of, and he knows that the scorpion could possibly be tossed off into the water and drown. He doesn't want that to happen. So they get close to the rocks, and the frog says to the scorpion, "Okay, I'm getting you near the rocks. Be prepared to crawl off of my back onto the rock, and you'll be able to walk on to the shore." Scorpion says, "No, I want you to take me to the shore." The frog said, "I've already told you I cannot do that. Not only that, but there are other critters on the shore. They're not going to be too happy with seeing you, and they might actually get quite violent. So this is the best way. You won't get wet. All you have to do is crawl along the rocks to get onto the shore." Scorpion says, "No, I'm going to stay on your back, and you're going to take me to shore." Well, this went on for a little bit of time. They get close to the rocks, and the scorpion said, "I told you you were going to have to carry me to shore." The frog said, "No." The scorpion promptly stung him, and the frog died. Point of the story, if a scorpion is a scorpion, it's still a scorpion. It's not going to change into anything else. It's so important for us many times to really be able to look at what is. And boy, I know many times in my life I've looked at what I wanted to see, not really what was being said to me or what was in front of me. So I just use myself as an example. But the story of the frog and the scorpion, it's again been adapted into many different costumes and environments, but it's basically the reality that many times we do have to look at the character of a person, their actions, not just be caught up with what they're saying, but how are they performing? What are they doing? And when we can do that and we don't superimpose what we would like to see, then I think we can avoid a lot of unpleasantness in our lives. But we are human beings, and I think we're all vulnerable in that respect, wanting to see what we want to see, not what really is being shown to us. So that's the story of the scorpion and the frog. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share.
do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Yes, Halloween's just around the corner. Telephone number you can call into is 888-627-6008. Black cats, witches' hats, and so much more. Well, I wanted to share a story about black cats. I just think they're absolutely adorable, and there's legend about the black cats, too, but we'll save that for another time. But there is this delightful story that I came across about a cat named Lincoln. And, oh, I've got a photo of him in front of me. He is just gorgeous. Silky, silky black coat. And there was a girl by the name of Bobby. She's from St. Louis, Missouri. She found this little tiny ball of fur on a sidewalk. It wasn't even as big as a chipmunk. You know how little they are. So this is a baby. And she just realized it was a cat. And she said, oh, my goodness, this is a baby, baby, baby kitten. And she said, what are we going to do with this animal? It's injured. It was dying. And when the animal rescue group arrived, they checked the kitty out. And by golly, they felt like its paws were broken. Well, Bobby was just beside herself. What was interesting about this is that, coincidentally, Bobby had just started fostering cats. And here is this little person that is in dire need of being taken care of. And they didn't think it was going to survive. But she said, oh, my goodness. This is really tragic because tucked up close to his body, his front paws, she said, seemed like they were locked in place. His back legs were sticking out. He didn't move. And while she was very gently holding him, he opened his eyes. And she said, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? Well, obviously, what you do is take the little one to a vet. There were no broken bones. And the vet said, what you have is a quadriplegic kitten. And we think the kitten has fallen or was thrown. It has a spinal injury. And I really recommend you put this kitty down. Doesn't seem to be in pain, but quadriplegic cat, how's it going to have a life? And then Bobby asked the question of the vet, can anything be done? And the vet said, well, maybe physical therapy. But by golly, how are you going to be able to do this? Because the animal is going to have to be massaged on a frequent basis throughout the day and evening. So the vet gave the best advice that she possibly could. And Bobby said, I'm going to do it. I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm going to do it. Now, she looked at this little one, decided to name him Lincoln after Abraham Lincoln because she thought Abraham Lincoln was a very special guy. But little Lincoln, this tiny kitten, couldn't do anything, totally immobilized. So she started massaging, helping the little one to move, propping him up between towels on a dog bed so that the kitty would have balance and develop stronger legs. And she had a boyfriend, and between the two of them, they worked with this tiny little ball of black fur. Nothing was happening. Then one day, they didn't give up. They just kept working with this little kitty. She stroked the kitty's back. The front paws moved. Oh, my goodness. A few weeks later, this little black piece of inanimate fur started moving. That's right. He started taking steps. It took a few more weeks, but you would never have known that this little kitten was labeled a quadriplegic because he was acting perfectly normal. She said, "This is just wonderful. It really is a miracle that he was in a place, in a space where I could find him." And there was a woman by the name of Elizabeth Frick. She said, "Bobby is really quite a special person because she's proved that there's no such thing as a hopeless case." Now, Lincoln, what a good namesake he had. Yes, he stands tall, just like good old Abe. And he's 8 pounds of fun right now. And she said to herself, what a wonderful example it is. This little tiny fur person that wasn't going to be able to be anything, labeled as a quadriplegic, ended up walking and having a normal kitty life, now a full-grown cat. And with that, Bobby says, if this little person can do it, I think just about anybody can get through anything. How do you feel about that? Would you agree? This is Donna Sebo. I know we're just about out of time. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life presents challenges to us because it's important for us to realize that we're a part of life to experience it. Nothing is going to be a straight line, and we're always going to have ups and downs, but it's how we work with it that makes the difference. Negotiating, well, that's part of the learning curve, and it's a good part of the learning curve. Don't be afraid of it. I know I was at one time, but you don't need to be. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back here tomorrow talking with you about the condor song. Yes, those birds that not very many people know about. Well, it's the theme of a novel that is totally gripping because it involves science, murder, and much, much more. Yes, if you're a mystery fan like I am, I think you'll enjoy this story. And Daryl Nozick, who is going to be my guest. So won't you join us tomorrow? And we'll be experiencing something of the unusual and the mysterious. This is Donna Sebo. Have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are on this wonderful planet of ours. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.